Hey folks, Michael here with a quick pre-roll. I just wanted to let you know that Action 12 Cinema, the GM-less game that I wrote as a love letter to bad but fun action movies and the D12, has been nominated for an Innie Award under the Best Rules category. So the Innies, that's E-N-N-I-E-S, are generally considered to be the highest honor amongst RPG books and accessories, supplements, that kind of thing. They are the Oscars, the Tonys, the Emmys, whatever you want to consider the best of that category, that's what the Innies are for RPG stuff. So it is absolutely a huge honor and a big deal that Action 12 Cinema is amongst the other nominees. So the way the system works is it's an open submission policy. So I self-selected Action 12 Cinema to be considered. But then they have a selection of judges that actually goes through and reviews each submission and narrows down to, usually it's a list of five, in some cases it's a little bit longer, but the ones that they think are the best of the best for that year. And we made that cut. And that is absolutely the highest honor I could possibly imagine. Now, however, comes the voting, and that's where you come in. So beginning on July 12th and ending on July 21st, there is an open voting platform. You'll just log in with your computer or your device. You'll go to the link. I'll put the link in the show notes when it becomes active, and you can vote for any and all of the winners in each of the categories. You can only vote once per IP address, and I'm not asking you to try to find your way around that. All I'm asking is if you would please consider voting for me and my game, Action 12 Cinema, in the best rules category sometime during that time frame. I am going to be at the Innie Awards this year at Gen Con, and I don't expect that we will get enough votes. Just we're up against some really big heavy hitters, but it truly would mean the world to me if that could happen, and that would only happen if you help me. So thanks, and now on to the show. Hello and welcome to the RPG Academy podcast. My name is Michael and I'm here with Chris, and we are going to be doing a sort of bonus episode to recap my recent trip to the Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio. Chris, say hello to everyone, please.
Hello, everyone.
So what has been new with you, bud?
Not a ton. Hasn't been too long since we last talked, but it's just same old, doing work, got caught up on the boys.
I haven't watched the most recent episode yet. Maybe I have. No, I don't think I have.
It's the boys. Yeah. The most recent one, which would be episode 5. Get ready. Hold on.
Where things get a little bit weird.
Okay.
All right. I'm looking forward. I've been enjoying season four, quite a lot. So I'm all in, ready for more. And then I'm an episode behind on House of the Dragon, which is another show the wife and I watch together. There was a lot going on this past weekend and just getting stuff caught up. So hopefully I'll get caught up this week. But anyway, we're going to start. We're going to talk a little bit about my recent trip to Origins. So Origins is a tabletop gaming convention based out of Columbus, Ohio. It is hosted by the GAMA, Game and Something Manufacturers Association. So sort of like a trade show aspect. It's not necessarily to the same level like Gen Con. So like most of the people who show up, like the game companies, they wait till Gen Con to like their new releases and their promotional sales. But I've been told by many people that Origins is the convention that like game designers go to play games. Gen Con is the convention they go to sell their games. So it's got a very sort of laid back atmosphere compared to some other cons. It's also a day longer. It's a full 5 days of gaming. They have gaming events Wednesday through Sunday. It's the Greater Columbus Convention Center, and there are two attached hotels to the convention center. And most of the games, like role-playing game sessions, are in the basement of the Hyatt. And then the Hyatt is attached to the convention center. So I will say, I love Gen Con still, but being able to go from my event to the room in like 10 minutes or less is pretty awesome compared to Gen Con, where it's like half an hour walk just about no matter where you are. And I went this year. I was there for the entire 5 days, and I played 11 RPGs in that time period. It was pretty much nonstop gaming. So all I did was eat, sleep, and game.
So I agree. I like the idea of the layout. I was at Origins got to be 9 years ago now. And it was a decent experience. We only stayed for a couple of days. It's actually where you and I first met face to face. I mean, we talked over the internet and doing podcasting stuff. And just haven't been back since then. Just life's been in the way. So I do remember that being a much nicer thing, is being able just to walk back and forth instead of hailing a cab to go back to your hotel and then cutting through one building to get to the next building, to cut through that building to get to the next building, like I did in Gen Con a lot, which is part of the experience.
True, true. Yeah, I mean, I love Gen Con, but Origins was nice. I think I had mentioned before, I went 2 or 3 years in a row, and then we have a family vacation we take every year in June, and for several years in a row, it just kept overlapping so that I couldn't go, or I could only maybe go for 1 or 2 days. And then last year and now this year, it has decoupled, and I have been able to go. And so basically that's my plan. If my family vacation does not overlap on Origins, I'll be going every year unless something happens, which, you know, obviously good, but that's the plan going forward anyways.
So you'd say your overall experience was good?
Yes. Out of 11 games, I had 2 that were terrible, 1 that was not great, and the other 8 were pretty solid.
Okay. Well, let's start with the positives.
Okay.
What was your favorite game?
So my favorite game was a Savage Worlds game. It's the Carabus Club, which is like a steampunk, magic punk kind of setting. It's like Victorian England, but it's also got like that Shadowrun thing where there's like orcs and trolls and dragons, but also like clockwork people. And, you know, so it's a mixture of magic and steampunk together. I don't have the full, because this is just a one shot. It was also a 7-player game, which I normally do not enjoy games more than 6 players. And I actively avoid games that have more than 6 players. So I don't even know how I signed up for this one, not realizing it was 7 players, but it was still my favorite game. The GM was amazing. Set the tenor right off the bat. I remember saying, I have 4 rules for the game. Number 1, everybody feels safe and comfortable at my table. 2, that everybody has fun. I can't remember what the 3rd one is now. And the 4th one was, we get the rules right. So I was like, okay, you and I are on the same page, bud. We started in media res. It's right off the bat. We just jumped into combat. It was a Savage Worlds game, which I've talked for. I don't play a lot of it, but every time I do, I enjoy it. Like, I don't know if I've ever had a truly bad experience with Savage Worlds. And I liked my character. I liked the other players with really good role playing. The DM was just absolutely handled the game masterfully. I will look for him specifically in other, I think he goes to Gen Con. I will look for him by name, which is funny because I can't remember his name right now, but I wrote it down. It's in my notes somewhere, that when I get to Gen Con, I will be looking for his events.
Oh, nice. I mean, that's a huge compliment for a GM, is when people come back for more.
Yep.
That's one of the things that I always look for when I go to conventions, and people go, hey, I remember you from last year. Mm-hmm. And then if they join my game, that's even more important to me.
And I mean, obviously, you know, a Catacon is like 500 people, and this is like 17,000 people. So it's still levels of magnitude higher and bigger than a Catacon. But I, like, even though I've only been 2 years in a row and there was a big gap, there are people that I just see in the hallways that I recognize. I'm like, I know that person from previous Origins. I played in one game, which was probably, I kind of step into that. It was my 2nd favorite game, which was a Dread game. And there were 5 of us. I have played with 3 of those folks before. So there's 4 other players besides me. I'd played with 3 of them in Dread games before. So I guess we all like Dread. Okay. So we were all signing up for the Dread games. And I'm like, we played together last year, right? So we were kind of like just knew each other's faces type of a thing. So even though it's still a big event, like I have Origin friends now, kind of. You know, it's like, I remember you. I remember you. We, you know, you're fun. You're a cool guy. Let's play the games together. Which is something about a Catacon that I kind of like, is that sort of not romantically intimate, but small. Mm-hmm. And I already have that at Origins too.
Oh, nice. So why is it that you don't like games that have more than 6 people?
Because I've only had it happen a couple times where I've been in games with that many people. And other than the Savage World, that's now the one exception. If I've ever played in a game with more than 6 people, it's been terrible. Like 2 of the worst games I've ever been in my entire life were games with 8 players. So I just try to avoid them because I just don't think many GMs, and certainly not most RPGs, can handle 8 players. You know, you have like 3, 4, maybe 5 hours, depending on the session. It's just hard to give everybody their due if there's any sort of rock role play. And I think the Savage World game benefited because it was so action-packed. Like, it really was action scene, interlude, action scene, interlude, action scene, you know, final battle. And we were role-playing as our characters in combat. So I still felt like I got some role-playing in. But the other times I've had eight players, it's just you can't do anything. You're just kind of existing for like a full hour. You take your turn, and then like 30 minutes later, it's your turn again. And it's just too many people. I like to have fewer people so that everybody gets a little bit more time to shine and in their spotlight.
I agree with you. I've played in one Dresden Files Fate game that had 11 players.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was rough. And you had a less experienced game master who was just excited to have that many people around the table.
Yep.
And it just, it was rough. It was very painful. There was very little actual role-playing because everybody was trying to figure out the system and the mm-hmm. setting. And, you know, really all we did is we finally got down and fought a vampire. And combat lasted like two rounds because there's 11 of us
right.
attacking it.
Yeah.
Which, to me, realistically, you're not fitting 11 people around one vampire. I mean, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I can tell you from a GM standpoint, I don't think I would want to game master that many people.
No, I don't have any desire. As a game master, my preference is three,
mm-hmm.
and my max is five. I won't run a game for more than five people.
I usually don't either. Mostly because, like you said a minute ago, you can't give them their moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I run a lot of Star Wars, so if you're playing the hacker, I've got to give you the chance to actually slice into a computer and try to do what you do. If there's too many people around, I can be like, okay, there's a locked door. Oh, the three of us are mechanics. We all roll mechanics, or I'm the big guy. I just punch the door. And mm-hmm. it's like, well, but wait, that guy could just.
Right. It was supposed to be that person's time to shine, but there's so many people that have overlapping skills that it's just, you know, and I know people who really have big games enjoy it. Like that's part of their enjoyment is getting 10 people around a table. So it's not like that's a bad style of game. It's just not my preferred style of game. So I'm just not interested in doing it.
Yeah, part of it for me too is it's too much conversation going on.
Well, and I think that's a natural extension of having that many people where it's hard to give everybody their time. So when the GM is focusing on like a couple people and you haven't done anything for 20 minutes, it's natural to start talking and like chatting. And it could be like game stuff, like, you know, what's your plan for your next level? Or do you think it's secretly mm-hmm. the governor? Like it might be related to the story, but I just think you're going to start getting more table talk, which then kind of slows everything else down because then it's like when it is your turn, you're like, oh yeah, well, yeah, I got to refocus back to what I'm doing. And it just sort of exacerbates the problem I have with large games.
I agree. Plus as the GM, if I'm having a scene with you, but I hear somebody else say something over here,
yep.
my brain will get pulled over there and then I lose the moment here
mm-hmm.
where it's like five or less, we can all focus on that moment that we're in and we don't have to worry about somebody getting pulled out. I also usually ask people to turn their phones off or at least silence them and leave them under the table until break. But I think that's just because I like people to be involved in it.
Right.
So. Well, let's bounce to the other side. What was you said you had two games you didn't really like. And I mean,
I had two.
Feel free to discuss as much as you want.
Flat out bad games. And I'm on TikTok now. So I've been talking a little bit about the games on TikTok. And I mean, anybody who's been listening to our show for a long time knows that I try to focus on positivity. And generally speaking, mm-hmm. we don't talk about negatives. If we don't like something, we just don't talk about it. But within this, I am going to share a few things. And it's not to like just critique or crap on the situation. It's in the spirit of why I think it was not good. And so anybody listening can either avoid that as a player at other conventions or a GM, maybe not do some of the things that these GMs did.
Okay.
One of the events that I played, so I have two really bad games. One of them was a living campaign game. Mm. I didn't know it was a living campaign game. Now, after I played it, I did go back and read the description again. And there are a couple like key words that I recognized in the description that had I known it, I would have recognized it. But not knowing it, it wasn't enough to tell me that's what was going on, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I was in that society, clearly that's the game I'm looking for. But as a complete ignoramus about the situation, I didn't understand that this was like a living campaign game. So one, I'm just not a fan of living campaigns anyways. It's just not something that's ever really interested me. And particularly at like a convention, it's a one shot. I just want to play the one time. I don't know that I'm ever going to come back. A lot of the people at the table that was with me, like this is like all they do. Like they play these living campaign games, three or four per convention, every convention, that's what they do. And more power to you. Like I, as much as I disliked this game, I could tell that many of them loved it. I mean, they absolutely love this world, this universe that they're in. And they basically have built their own corner of the TTRPG world. Like they have their own universe that they are fleshing out over almost 30 years. They were telling me like, this is a thing that's been going on for 30 years. So I'm kind of impressed, but as an outsider, it was impenetrable for me. It was also an 8-player game, but it was supposed to be a 6-player game, but the GM let 2 additional players sit down. So I don't know that I would have signed up had I known it was going to be 8 players. I still might have, because it was a system I've been interested in. And this was the only way I didn't know it was a living campaign, but it's the only way I could play. It was like the only offering of this game system. So I wanted to play it. And so again, right off the bat, 8 players. And it was just like a very slow adventure. It was kind of a weirdly built adventure too. I think it wasn't very action packed. And then again, I'm trying to be kind of vague because I don't want to crap on anybody. But the way the adventure was set up, it kind of goes sideways, which is what adventures are supposed to do, right? Like you expect it to go sideways, but it didn't go sideways in the pull out your blaster, pull out your sword kind of way. It went sideways in, we can't actually do what we were supposed to do. So we now have a secondary objective. But to do the secondary objective, it was just like 3 social roles. So, I mean, it was just like, I guess, kind of like boring, I guess. Like if you were watching this as a show, it would be pretty boring. And just because it was a living campaign, there were people who had characters that, again, were factors of degrees better at everything. The best roll I could do, I would roll 4 dice. There was a check that one of the other players rolled. They rolled 30.
That's a little different.
Like, that's how much higher level they were than me. So there was nothing, and I do mean nothing, that my character could do. There was not one skill, ability, or power on my sheet that at least one other person at the table was at least 3 times better than. So there was really no incentive for me to do anything. Like, every time I had a couple ideas, like, hey, can we do this? But then someone else rolled because it didn't make sense for me to roll, because why would they let the rookie do it when there's like a master thief over here? There's a master hacker. There's a master marksman. So just, you know, especially you got 8 players, way too much overlap, just too slow. Again, I don't feel like we did a whole lot. So yeah, just all the way around, I existed for 4 hours and I could not wait to leave the table when the game was over. And what's awful and funny about this, so about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I was on the Facebook page for Gen Con, the Fans of Gen Con page, and someone was talking about, you know, I want to sign up for an event, but it was sold out. Is there any way for me to, you know, maybe get into a similar game or the same game? And people were giving feedback. Like, there's a website that tracks every time a ticket is returned. So, like, you know, you can check back and maybe one of the games you want, there's an open seat now, you can pick up a ticket. Somebody said, hey, you can show up with generics and hope someone doesn't show. And then someone else said, you can also show up with generics and just ask to be set in, like, as an extra player. And I'm like, please don't do that. Don't do that, because one, the GM might say yes, even they don't really want to. You know, the other players at the table may not want to have extra players, but no one wants to be the a-hole and say anything. So it's like this, you kind of feel pressured into saying okay. And I had a few people that were like, you sound awful. I would not want to play with you because this is just more people getting to have fun. And I was trying to explain my whole rationale about too many players and it slows the game down. And I mean, it was pretty clear. Everyone thought I was awful. So when this happened in this game and I was sitting there at 6 players and the 2 players showed up and the GM let them sit down, I was about ready to walk. And then I'm like, well, you know, maybe it's me. I'll try it. No, it was awful. I should have got up and left. Absolutely. I regret. And I'm sticking to my guns. If it happens again, I'm not going to flip the table. I'm not going to yell at anybody. I'm going to do the, oh my gosh, my mom's in the hospital, and then leave, right? I'm not going to ruin anybody else's fun. But never again will I play with 8 players unless it's Savage World. That's the one system I might at least try it, because I've had fun at 7.
Well, that's fair. I have played a couple of the living campaigns at conventions. I would say the most successful one I played in was a Starship Troopers living campaign.
Okay.
And we didn't know that's what it was. We sat down. The GM's like, oh, hey, have you played this before? Like, no. The other 2 players immediately went, oh. And I watched them put their papers away. And I was like, what are you doing? They go, we're going to just grab one of the pre-gens. And the game master looked over and smiled and said, thank you.
Yeah.
And what it was is it was the same experience you would have had. They would have been 30 times more powerful than us, which I would have had fun with because then I would have just ran around and shot my little pea shooters at random things and try to be more creative. But I actually appreciated the fact that they didn't pull their characters out. And the guy running the story still gave them their points for it, for their characters, because I guess they get to level their characters up. I've never played in one, so, or stayed in one, so I don't really know how that works. I have played in a Pathfinder Society one where I had the same experience you did, where I'm like, tink, with my crossbow, yeah, I did 3 points. And the guy next to me is like, I throw my spoon and do 30.
I've played a couple of Pathfinder games because my kids, when I've taken my boys to a couple of conventions, and, you know, organized play is one of the few things that you can get into, you know, pretty easily. And most of those are still like banded. Like, this is a 1-4 game pre-gens provided. This is a 5-8 game pre-gens provided. So even if you've never played before, you'll be fifth level. They give you the lowest level, and there can be people up to 8. But still, 5-8 is different than 4 dice to 30 dice. Like, that is not even in the same stratosphere of power level. And as I said, like, there were people, like, it was clear that they enjoy the world that they're a part of. But in the game itself, I could see that there were other people that were having the same sort of miserable time. I'm pretty sure that they were not having fun, like, reading the table. But to your, like you said, at the end of the game, they got stuff. They got points to help build their character. They got credits in universe that, you know, they have their character basically levels up for every other adventure they're part of. And for some of it, it felt like some of them were just there to get those level ups. And this was just like, it was like grinding, like in a video game. Like, they didn't actually enjoy this individual adventure, but they enjoyed the concept enough that they were willing to do these adventures so that later they can do the other things. And I just think from like a organizational standpoint, one, the description should have very clearly said, this is a living campaign. Newer characters will be mixed with higher level characters. And or if, because they seemed very excited that I was there. I mean, I'm not going to say it was a cult, but they were offering me like, hey, here's how you do. Like, they were really excited to have somebody new that could potentially join their organization, which is great. It makes me, makes me feel wanted. I love that. But then there should have been a, this is for new players. Everyone at the table is going to be new. Or to your point, if I'm experienced, I'm still going to play a different character. I'm going to play a lower level character and let everybody be kind of on the same playing field so that we can, because I can't imagine wanting to do it again. And they seem to want people to do it again. I think that was a bad organizational decision to not have one dedicated adventure just for new people. If you've never played a living campaign before, here's where you start. And give me the great game. Give me the hard sell so that I want to come back. Because I do not ever want to play that game again. I don't know. If they really want people to join their cult, they did a poor job. The game, the people were nice. They were all very kind and complimentary, and like they were very sweet. But the game was bad.
I have played in one, and this was up years ago, one of the Star Wars D6 games. Is it West End Games, I think? It's been a long time. And I remember sitting down at the table, and one of the guys came over, and his question was, which one are we running? And the guy was like, whatever number. Module 12. He looks through. Oh, I've done that one. Can we do 14? And the guy, I remember looking at us. I'm like, oh, sure. I haven't done 1 through 13, so 14 doesn't matter to me. But all he was looking for was to finish the modules he hadn't done so he could get more points. Mm-hmm. Now, they made that a little more bearable than your situation, because even though he had a higher power character, he would still say, hey, you guys take the lead. I'm here to back you up.
Right.
And it turned into almost, I mean, we weren't Jedi, but it was almost like we were his Padawans, and he was the master kind of teaching us how to do things. And we ended up having fun with it. And the GM even laughed. He's like, well, I kind of modified this, this, and this for that. And I'm like, I appreciate it. Yeah. Like, that's great. Like, I'm fine playing this young, eager guy that wants to prove himself and keeps breaking his lock picks. And then the other guy comes and goes, here, let me show you. Click. I'm like, oh, thanks.
Right.
You know, we still had fun with it. But it just, when you said that they were checkmarking things, that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
And that's what I think. If you're listening to this and you're an experienced player in a living campaign, identify somebody who's new. And if you really want to pull them into that living campaign, give them that good experience. either put your sheet away or, I don't say dumb down your character, but give them a chance to shine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't run up and just kill every bad guy. You know, I would go even as far as flub your dice roll. Oops, no, I missed. You're shot.
Right, yeah.
If the GM's not able to adjust the encounter, flub a dice roll or use the wrong skill.
Yeah, do something. I don't know. But yeah, it was not for me. I truly am glad it exists for them so that they get to have the game that they want to have. Our hobby is big enough to accommodate play styles that I don't enjoy, but I'm still glad they exist for the people that enjoy them.
Yeah, for sure. So what was the other experience? What can we mine from that?
Okay. This one's going to be a little harder to talk about without giving too much away. So just if you were a part of this game or if you're the game master or the organization, I apologize. I just don't know how to express how this was bad without being open about it. So this was for the new Marvel RPG, the 616 Multiverse RPG, right? Now, okay. I'm currently running a campaign of that with my buddy Brandon and a couple local people I've met here in Corbin at the library. We play roughly once every 3 weeks, once a month type of a thing. And I don't know the rules that well. I played like one demo when it first came out, I think last year at Gen Con. And so I signed up for a one-shot to play with someone else who maybe knows the rules better than me just to see, like, am I doing anything right? Maybe get some tips and techniques. So I went in really I wanted to focus on the mechanics of the game. Was I running it right? Tips and tricks, right? And the person who was running the game clearly loves comic books. Like, they absolutely are a diehard Marvel fan, which I am too. I grew up reading comics, absolutely. I think the reason they were running the game is because they love comic books, not that they were particularly good at running the game, because honestly, they were messing things up. I don't know the rules really well, but I know they were doing things wrong. The other thing I think was a contributing factor is there were three youngsters at the table, not like kids, but like maybe teenagers. I don't know. I'm terrible with ages. I think they were older than my kids, but they weren't like adults. I'm going to say they were like 14 or 15.
Okay.
And I don't know if the DM was trying to like hard sell the game for them, like really want to make sure they had a good time. But they were like, they were explaining the Marvel game like we had never heard of superheroes before.
Mm.
There was a moment where one of the characters wanted to do something, and the DM's like, well, no, it's not like your guy's strong. They're like super strong. Okay, so like, they're not just like, you know, me lifting weights, but like, they can like pick up a car, and that's how strong they are. And we're like, yeah, we're superheroes. We know that. Like, that wasn't anything out of the ordinary. And this is a true life example. I'm not exaggerating at all. This was probably the epitome of my frustrations with this game. So in the scenario, we were trying to sneak into a place that had Hydra agents. And there were multiple Hydra agents in this big sort of open room. And we had managed to get into a room behind some of the guards. And the DM had said that the door opens inward, and there was a guard like right where the door would be. So the player said, well, what I want to do is open the door and then pull the guy in and like sneak attack him. They even said the word sneak attack. And the DM was like, okay, so imagine this is what's happening. He points over to the door, to the room we're in, and goes, imagine your character's on the other side of that door and we can't see them, right? And then they just sort of like jumped into the room and attacked us. That's like what you're doing. He described doing that. You don't need to reiterate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was everything that we did. Every time anybody did anything, he would give us like the most dumbed down explanation of the thing that we were doing that's on our character sheets, like super strong people. We had Spider-Man was shooting webs, and he was like, this is what it looks like when you shoot. It's like this thing comes out of your wrist and like it can like web people, or you can swing on. Like, it was literally like describing people who never read a comic book or seen a movie, Marvel movie at all, ever. Everything was just based down. And then they got the rules wrong. And so it was just so frustrating. I just was like, oh my gosh, and maybe it was me, but I was about ready to pull my hair out. That game was just so slow and unnecessarily dumbed down.
Do you think that's because he was an inexperienced GM?
I don't know, because it was with a group. Like, there was an organization that was running all of these Marvel games. It wasn't just like some random guy. It was like a group of GMs that run multiple games and multiple systems. So I don't understand. my best guess, to be charitable, is he wanted to make sure these kids had a great time, and he was just trying to sell the excitement of getting to be superheroes to them. But I don't think he was reading the table. I think they were ahead of him, and he was trying to, like, you know, really sell how cool it is to be a comic book character, which I'm all for that. And when I have kids at my tables, I cater to them. Absolutely. I try to make sure they have the best moments. I try to really let them shine in the game as best I can. I just think this was like not being able to read the table and being more excited about the characters than the game. I think the balance was off between the two, and they may have all had a great time, but again, reading the table as a DM, I don't think they did.
That's a tough one. Reading the table is, I think, a skill. You've got to really pay attention. And there's other tricks. I remember playing in a Dungeon World game, and we were all little pixies, and we had to fight other pixies, and there were butterflies, and I made the joke, are they big enough I could ride one? And the GM going, they are now.
Yeah.
Jump on. And I was like, that was beautiful.
Yep.
Like, you read that was just something I wanted to do. And it was in part because I wanted to do it, and in part because the girl next to me was very shy, and she had said, oh, it'd be cool if we could ride butterflies. And I was like, well, all right, can we ride them? And yeah,
right.
The GM just jumped on that and read the table right. And that stuck out in my mind. So I try to do the same thing. I would say, as far as the rules, I'm not the best at the rules. So I don't really care if the rules are done right. Like, I can roll with that as long as the scene went well and we had fun.
Right.
But at the same time, if you're the guy repping it, you should probably know the rules.
Yeah, I kind of think so. But yeah. Again, maybe it was just me. It is what it is. I always give respect to someone who's willing to step behind the screen, especially at a convention. It's, you know, I have anxiety around that, and it takes some courage and some you know, effort to do that. So I give them credit that they tried it. I do think it was a good intention. Like, I don't think they were just like an awful GM or an awful person. They thought they were doing the right thing. So no hate to them or anything like that. No shade their way. But it just, my expectations of the game were very different than the reality, and it caused conflict for me to enjoy the game. But it's entirely possible I was the only one, and everyone else had a great time. The other thing that I did notice is it was scheduled for 4 hours, and we were done in three. And that was with him over-explaining every step of the way. So maybe he was just trying to make the game
last longer,
a little longer, trying to draw it out. Because, you know, someone signs up for a four-hour game and it's a two-hour game, you might have some people who are like, well, you know, I wouldn't have signed up for a two-hour game. So maybe he thought he needed to sort of drag it out, and that was one way to extend the game, was to slow everything down. I personally would have been happier with an action-packed hour-and-a-half game. Like, it's like a movie, just nonstop action. Hour and a half, I would have been like, awesome, high-fiving everybody, and I'd go get an early dinner. So that could have been it, too. Maybe it was just a poor time management compensation device sort of thing.
Well, that's where, as a GM, I mean, that is one of my struggles, is timing in games and getting that pacing right. I mean, one of the tricks I use is, okay, we're, in my head, I say this, right, we're ahead of where I think we should be in the story. The next encounter, the creatures are going to have an extra little bit of health, and they're going to randomly miss more often.
Mm-hmm.
Or that way I can draw the encounter out longer and make the combat last a little longer and not have to add anything extra into it. Same time, if it's running long, I'm like, ooh, we should have been far ahead. Then you got to learn how to cut scenes out or just talk to the table. But with that game, though, do you think as a player there's anything you could have maybe mentioned to him or whispered to him at a break and just said, hey, you don't necessarily need to explain things. I think we're good. Or do you think that would have made it more uncomfortable for both of you?
I don't know, because I did not consider doing that. So maybe I should have had that courage. But sometimes I just wonder if it's me. Like, you know, I don't want to be the person who's like, I'm not having fun if everyone else is. I don't think they were, but I could be wrong. I could be misreading the table. Yeah. Maybe they were into it. But no, it didn't hit me to do that. I don't know that there would have been an opportunity, though. I could have done it without doing it in front of everybody. Like, I obviously would have had to pull them to the side. Because I think, again, it was a shorter game. I think we only took one break, and they went to the restroom, and I didn't want to, like, follow them there. So I really didn't have a good opportunity. So I don't know, maybe. I do want to touch on the pacing, though, because pacing is something that came up several times throughout the whole, because again, I played 11 sessions in the 5 days. And there was one game in particular where I thought the pacing really stood out to me. And it was a Genesis game. So it's the Star Wars system for Age of the Empire Fantasy Flights game. But this was like the generic fantasy, you know, from the Genesis Corp rulebook, whatever. And it was kind of an interesting game. So one, I got to play with friends of the show, Targris and Orion. They come to a Catacon most years, listen to the show. I have had the opportunity to meet them a couple times. And it's always fun when you get to play with people you know. I think that raises the enjoyment. And it was an interesting game. It started off really good. Well, technically it started off bad because the DM was late. But that was because they took public transport and they got a little bit behind. And they literally ran. So it was like 10 minutes after start time. And the dude was covered in sweat. Like, he literally ran. And this was like the 90-degree heat of, you know, like 2 weeks ago. So I give him full credit for doing that. But he showed up, and like right off the bat, we all had interesting. It was a one shot. It was designed to be action packed. We all had secret abilities and powers and this background thing. Like, everybody was unique in some cool way. And it seemed like we could kind of do whatever we wanted. Like, the way the game started, we were in the city that was about to be overrun by like a million demons. Like, it was very much, you can't really win. Your job is to try to survive, or maybe out, you know, these overwhelming odds against you, right? And the way the game was set up, we learned that the entire royal family had basically disappeared in the night because they were like, we're out of here. We're not going to live this, so we're going to leave all you people here. We're going to take off. And I was like, well, I doubt they had time to empty the treasury. Let's go rob the treasury. You know, I was basically doing like the zombie heist movie. You know, we're going to try to get in, get the treasure, and get out before the zombies or the demons show up. And the demon was like, yeah. And just jumped on that. And I was like, oh, we're playing a game where we can just do whatever the hell we want, right? And then once we got to the castle, the DM put on the hard brakes. And everything we did was like pulling teeth. Like, everything slowed down so hard that then I'm like, are we now off track? Are we doing the wrong thing? And then the ending was really good as well. And I think it was a pacing mechanic that was the only way they knew to kind of run the game so that it didn't end too quickly, is it just everything had to get too hard. And then the other thing I noticed is that there were all these moments where the DM was sort of like layering in the verisimilitude of the world that we were in. And for a one shot, I don't know that we needed all that. Like, we would make a check, like a knowledge check, and then we would get like this lore dump about the world. And if I'm running a campaign, that's how I do it. Like, I don't want to just like, here's 3 pages of prose I'm going to read you. But as we're playing the game and you're like, you do a knowledge check about the royal family, I'll give you some tidbits about the royal family to help flesh out the world. But in a one shot, I think you did too much of it to the point that, it sort of slowed the game down. And I think it was a pacing mechanic. I think he was trying to keep the game from ending too quickly. But for me personally, I don't know to the other players, I got like, man, this is getting rough here in the middle. But he started strong and it ended great. But the middle was kind of rough for me. And it was all about pacing mechanics, I think.
Maybe I'm just an oddball, but if I feel like we're going too fast in a game, I'm also not afraid to say to the players, hey, we're flying through this quicker than I had originally planned. We may end early. Is that a problem for anybody? If not, give me a couple seconds here and let me add a couple things or see what we can do. And I've never had players say, nah, we want you to add a bunch of stuff. Right. Usually they're like, oh no, that's cool. And then somehow usually it still ends up working out right. Or
yeah,
vice versa. If I'm like, hey, I think we're going to run a little long, we can either cut out this section and kind of do like a little montage, or we can run long. And usually people are, well, let's just cut this out and we can just roll some dice real quick and tell us how it comes out.
Right.
I'm like, okay, perfect. And I think as a GM, just do that. Like, I don't think people are upset if you're honest with them. I'm also the GM that if you do something that I'm like, whoo, I did not think of that at all. Give me a second to figure out how that really cool thing you're describing is going to work.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've said this before. I would much rather end early in a compelling, like satisfying way than, we have 4 hours to fill. We got to get to the 4 hour mark. I mean, it's a convention. This was like, I happily would have had a little bit longer time at lunch. So don't artificially extend it. And the one real example, this is the one that really stuck with me, is where I felt like it was just like pulling teeth. So we came up with a plan essentially, again, there's like a million demons, right? It's like literally like an overwhelming amount. But there was one giant demon that was like, you know, Godzilla tall. And it was became very clear that that's the one. If we could take that one out, then all the rest would either disappear or scatter. Like, he was the anchor point for all the other demons. If we manage to take him out, we can win, you know, one shot, destroy the whole army. So we're trying to figure out, well, how do we get to that demon who's in the middle of, like, you know, 500,000 demons? And we came up with our plan, and the DM was like, well, maybe that's not a good plan. Think of a different plan. Not in those words, but it's pretty clear, right? So then we came up with a different plan, and then they're like, well, that's not a great plan either. So we came up with a different plan. That wasn't a great plan either. And ultimately, we did our original plan. And it felt like the DM was wanting us to come up with something different. Maybe they didn't think it would really work. And it's like, well, if you actually do that, I should just kill you, but I don't want that to happen. But then ultimately, all we did was waste about 45 minutes to an hour of the game just to do what we originally said we were going to do. And when we got back to that, I was like, did we really just do that? Did we really just go around and around and around just to have the same plan? And again, I don't know if it was intentional. I don't know if I was the only one that felt frustrated about that, but I was just like, that just felt, the pacing felt off in a way that they were just trying to artificially extend the game, or they wanted us to come up with something and we were just too dumb to come up with a better plan. So we eventually did the same plan anyway. So I don't know. It seemed kind of a weird pacing to me.
See, that's where I get frustrated both as a player and a GM when the players won't come up with a plan. I get more frustrated when it's like, all right, we just spent 45 minutes hemming and hawing. Why? Let's just get a plan and do it. So as a GM, if you're like, here's my plan, I'm like, cool, let's go. Even if I don't think it's going to work, all right, let's roll some dice. Right. Let's see how it's going to go. If it doesn't work, well, then you're going to hit some sort of roadblock that you're going to have to overcome to get there, or you're going to have to rethink it.
Right.
90% of the time in my games, if it's a roadblock, it's because your dice just didn't like you. Mm-hmm. And the dice went, no. It's not because I said no. Right. It was because the dice just failed, and you're like, well, I couldn't open that door. All right, so what are you going to do? Well, now I guess we have to climb through the ventilation shaft. I'm like, okay, we'll go that route now. But,
this was a TikTok thing that was like a trend people were doing. They were commenting on things about the game. And my contribution was, when I'm running a game, I am running an action adventure story, not a survivalist game. So I want my players to act accordingly. So you're never going to do something that is so totally wrong that I'm just going to be like, well, all your characters die. We're going to find a way for it to work like an action show where, no, you made the bad choice. Things get more interesting. I'm not just going to be like, you're dead. Your characters died because you did this dumb thing. So make a choice, make a bold choice, roll some dice, and it's going to have a chance to work even if it shouldn't work. The problems that come up of this choice is not going to end in everyone's instant death. We're going to find a way for something to happen so that you can have a chance of keep going. Again, just bold action-packed choices will be rewarded more than, well, we need to be careful because, you know, I'm not playing Walking Dead, the RPG, unless I'm actually playing the Walking Dead RPG, right? I'm playing heroic high fantasy action adventure. Bold choices will be rewarded.
I agree. Well, let's switch. What purchases did you come home with? Or did you buy anything?
I didn't buy much at all. I had a couple things I had my eye on, but this isn't a convention that's about like promos or new game releases. Almost everything gets held for Gen Con. The one thing I wanted to buy, there's a new expansion for the DC deck builder game called Justice League Dark, which is like Constantine, Zatanna, Swamp Thing, Wonder Woman. Those are your heroes. There's one more that I don't remember. And it's like more supernatural, magic-y sort of villains. And there's a new mechanic where you can seal cards. So essentially you take them out of your own deck. But they're not the bad cards, they're the good cards. So you can use them for a little while, but if you choose to seal them away, you will get to count them as points. But it's also weakening your deck to do so. So there's like a mechanical benefit when you seal a card. Maybe you get to draw a card or you get to use a card from the lineup. And it had just come out. And I was like, oh, well, I'll pick that up at you know, surely someone at the convention will be selling it, either one of the retail stores, or I know Cryptozoic as a company is always at Gen Con. No one in the entire room was selling that game. None of the retail people had it, and their Cryptozoic did not show up. So I ended up ordering it off the website. I now have it, but that was the one thing I planned on buying. All right. So wasn't a very exciting purchasing thing. And that's more of a Gen Con thing, really, at least for me anyways.
So do you think Origins would be a better place to go to try to get deals on maybe last year's stuff that they're still trying to move?
Maybe. I feel like I'm coming across as like I'm the problem, and maybe I am. Maybe I'm the problem. So there was one thing that I was thinking about buying. It was, again, I'll try to be vague because I don't want to put anybody on blast, but it was from a retail store, like a game retail store, not like a publishing house. Okay. They publish a lot of different games. And there was a box set that I have been thinking about buying for like a couple years now. And they had it, and it wasn't priced. So I was like, hey, can I find out how much this is? And the guy who helped me was nice, but the guy at the counter who gave me the information did not seem like he wanted to be there. He did not seem like he cared at all about whether I would buy it or not. It was just very just like, it's this price. I was like, ooh, that's a little expensive. He's like, okay. I mean, just like, there was no... I'm not saying he needed to give me a better price, but there was just no salesmanship at all about, you know, like, this is the only one we got, or, you know, this is a really good set. You'll enjoy it. You know, I don't like a car salesman. I wanted the sale because I wanted to buy it, right? I just needed a little push to buy it, and I would have given him some money, but did not seem at all interested. So I went back and checked like a couple different times over the week, looked at it again. Like, clearly this was something I wanted to buy. So the last day is on Sunday, and this is kind of a common thing. Sometimes you can get deals on Sunday because people don't right. want to pack things up. So I went in on Sunday. It was that same guy. He was the only one at the cashier stand at the time. And I'm like, so that this thing costs this much money. Is that negotiable at all? And he just goes, no. Like, there wasn't even like, I'm sorry. I just feel like he could say no in a way that didn't make me feel like I was a moron. Was not interested at all. So I went to Amazon and I got it cheaper on Amazon. I'm sorry. I don't want to give Bezos money either.
Right.
But if he would have just even been like chuckled, like, man, I'm sorry, I know you want this thing, but I just can't, I probably would have bought it from him. Right. But he just did not seem like he cared at all about me as a customer. And it kind of gave me the skeevy. So I ended up buying it through Amazon the next day, and I now have it. So I'll have it at a Catacon. I do want to touch on one other thing though, back to the game just for a minute. I got to play two Dread games. I love Dread. And in particular, the second Dread game I played was really good. And there were some things that the DM did I want to kind of touch on. One, her name was Mary. She was very polite, not polite, she's a very pleasant lady. And she is part of a small gaming con, kind of like a Catacon. It's called Scarab Con, and it is in Columbia, South Carolina. And if she is a representative of that organization, I think this is a game convention people would enjoy going to. It's comparable in size to a Catacon, but it's just too far. It's like an 8-hour drive, so I'm probably never going to make it. But if you're anywhere near Columbia, South Carolina, it's in January each year. But the way that her Dread game, we were in a haunted mansion, very classic. We got called there for the reading of a will. We all had like a monetary reason to be there. We were hoping that we get a cut of this really wealthy benefactor, family member type of thing. And things go sideways very quickly. So to navigate the house, you either had to pull a brick to get to where you're going because the house was like working against us, or you could just roll a die and go where it randomly took you. So if you were trying to get to a specific place, you had to pull extra bricks. So one brick to get there and then one brick to search the place. And in each room you could search, and you could search more than once. And there was like this whole stack of cards. And I don't know if they were shuffled or if it was like a specific order, but if you searched a room, you got to pull a card off the top. And sometimes it was a clue because there were like a couple riddles you had to solve, and the riddles would lead you to a key, and you had to have all the keys in the house to open the final door situation. And sometimes you would get like a bad card where like you would be attacked by a creature, a monster, a ghost, or the house would do something to you, and then you had to pull extra bricks. And I thought that was if you take a step back, it's like, obviously that's kind of how you'd run a haunted house, but I'd never had a Dread game that ran that way before. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great mechanic. I think it was one of the best Dread games I've ever played, and I absolutely loved it. And it's things that I want to steal for my game going forward. So I definitely want to shout that game out.
Excellent. So did you steal all of it? You're going to run it to the Catacon?
Not all of it, but I think if I do go back to my Scooby-Doo game, I might incorporate some of those things like the randomness, or I think the card getting clues is kind of a cool mechanic. It's going to get you to pull more pulls, but there is that reward incentive for doing it. So maybe, but I don't know. I could run it. Honestly, I could run it just taking everything that she did and make my own version of it pretty easily. And I think you could run a Dread game really, really fun. One other thing I want to mention, this is back to the Savage World game, because I wanted to mention this before. I posted this on TikTok, and somebody told me, I guess it's a technique that's a established thing. I have it on my TikTok. I don't remember what it is. But there was a part where we had to navigate through a city, and the DM laid out 25 tarot cards. And we knew that we had to find a certain card. In this case, it was called the key. And once we found the key, we would be where we were trying to go. And we knew it was on the final row. But we started on the opposite end, and we had to pick a card to start on. We flipped it up, and then based off of what tarot card it was, it would trigger a challenge. And it's kind of like a skill challenge in D&D. So each card was associated with a certain encounter type, and there was like social encounters, there were investigative encounters, and there were combat encounters. If it was a combat, we still didn't go into combat, but we would use skills, like you could use your fighting skill as a check, right? And so everybody could participate, but if you failed, you actually created a negative. So one person was the main roller for the group, but if I tried to help and I actually failed the roll, rather than just not helping, I hurt them. So it wasn't that everyone got to roll every time. You had to make a decision based on your character, and you had to give a little explanation of how you were helping rather than just rolling the die. We went through it pretty quickly, but I could see this being like an entire session. Like if this wasn't a one shot, if this was a campaign, I could see that being a full session. That's all you're doing, or maybe even multiple sessions. Like I thought that could be the haunted house, or that could be navigating the dungeon where you don't really worry about where rooms lead to room, but each card is a room of the dungeon. And when they reveal it, then you would have a key like, oh, you've now entered this. And I thought it was a really cool way to sort of simulate moving through an area you don't actually know. It was like an extended skill challenge. I thought it was brilliant. So this is absolutely something I plan on stealing for myself. I'm going to go back to that TikTok where someone commented, like there's like, I can't remember the name. I'm sorry. There's a guy who created this concept, and you can like look it up and get the information. I'll put that when the show comes out, I'll put it in the show notes. But I thought it was great. I absolutely loved it. And it's one of the reasons why that game was so fun to me. I think I just loved the way they handled that.
I like that idea. Adds a little randomness to it.
Yep. Big fan. Big fan.
Yeah, that's a very neat idea. I would have never thought of that. I would have just made encounters in different streets. I said, all right, what street are you going down?
Yeah.
Oh, you went down street B? All right. I know what's going to happen on B because I've already got it planned out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a neat idea. So you had, overall, though, you had a good experience. You liked not having to walk so far.
Yes.
You had some great games.
Yes.
So, big question, how's the food there?
So, I lived in Cincinnati for quite a while, and one of my favorite places to eat in Cincinnati was Jet's Pizza. It's not the best pizza in the world, but I really enjoy it. And since I moved from Cincinnati, I don't get Jet's Pizza very often. There's a Jet's Pizza in the convention center. I think I had Jet's Pizza every day I was there. Like, I would just get it, take it to the room, and I would eat on it multiple times. So for breakfast, I had my normal big bar, and there was one day I had Indian for like a chicken tikka masala. Every other meal was Jet's Pizza. So probably kind of gross saying that out loud, but I enjoyed it.
Well, I just know that that can be a big experience for people. Like when I went to Gen Con, I thought it was really cool to have all the food trucks.
Yeah.
Because then I could go, all right, I want a burger today. I want barbecue tomorrow. I want, you know, whatever. And I could go from different truck to truck and try different things. And that added to the experience. Where other conventions, you're kind of stuck with whatever's in the food court.
Yeah. And again, this was part of the food court. That was part of my decision. Maybe to make it a little bit more palatable. So they had a text-based ordering. So I was able to like text it like 30 minutes before the game was over. And then as soon as my game was over, I could run over and pick it up. You know, eat it. Because I literally was going game to game to game with like an hour in between. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a lot of time. I certainly couldn't go out of the building for food. I didn't have time. So it was somewhat of a convenience factor, but there were other restaurants I could have done that with. But I enjoyed Jet's Pizza. It was good. So yeah, big fan of Jet's Pizza.
Oh, nice. Anything else you want to talk about Origins that we didn't cover?
I will say that I got to play an Actun Cthulhu game. Which was kind of sold like a Indiana Jones sort of thing. I think it's more like Hellboy because it wasn't like the Nazis were like looking for supernatural weapons. Nazis had supernatural weapons, like they were spellcasters and like golem constructions that we were fighting, or golem, I should say. It was a 2D20 system by Modiphius. I've played that system a couple of different times, Star Trek and then Fallout, and I thought Star Trek was okay. I actively disliked the Fallout game. Maybe it's just the roles, but I thought the math was against us. This was the best 2D20 experience I'd had so far. I thought the GM did a really good job, had a lot of fun. I tried Pirate Borg. Are you familiar with Mork Borg?
Nope.
Michael Waldschlager actually did a review for the site of that game. And, I think it was mixed expectations. I thought I was going to be playing like a Pirates of the Caribbean piratey romp adventure. It was not that at all. Did not particularly enjoy that game, but that had not. The GM did a really good job. Other players at the table, we did everything. We had fun, but it just wasn't what I was expecting it to be. And those mixed expectations were a little bit eh. Yeah. And then the last thing is I got to try out the new Gloomhaven RPG. I've never played Gloomhaven. I thought the mechanics were very dense because I did not have the experience of the game. So there were like symbols and mechanics that I'm sure if you played the game made sense, but to me it was like, yeah, I just like, you know, Chinese trigonometry or something. Just, I was not understanding what was happening. But I did think it was interesting. You don't roll dice. You have a deck of cards and, you just flip a card over when you're doing a thing. And there's one number that represents your combat skill. You're always assumed to hit. So the cards just affect your damage. So you might have +0 to damage. You might have +1 to damage. There's one critical hit card that doubles your damage, and there's one that's just a critical fail, so you do miss. And you don't shuffle your deck until you draw one of those two. So there is a sort of like a card counting aspect that I actually kind of enjoy. It's like, I have +0, +0, +0. Oh, I have a better chance. I should be getting close to the +1s, or I have a critical hit coming up. So you can kind of make a little bit of choice based off of that, which I thought was interesting. And then as like inspiration, if you're role-playing really well, the DM can give you a bonus card. Like, here's a +4 card that you can put in your deck, shuffle it. Now you know there's this, like, a bless sort of thing going on.
Right.
I don't know that I enjoy it, but I thought it was interesting. So I thought that was kind of a cool mechanic that I might want to play around with. I don't know that I need to play the RPG again, but I did end up ordering Jaws of the Lion, which is like the intro version of Gloomhaven, because I wanted to play around with those mechanics a little bit more.
I've played that. That's the, I call it a flip book, but it's the, I called it Gloomlight.
Okay.
You have a book that has several different scenarios in it, and you play through the scenarios with your characters, and we played only a couple, but I think you can not improve your character, but I think you got different gear that helped your character.
Okay, kind of like a legacy thing, like you get advancements or top
kind of
thing. Yeah. So I now have that. We can play it at a catacomb this year. Maybe I'll bring it to the faculty retreat.
Yeah, I liked it because you didn't have this giant box you had to pull out. It was a small little box, and each scenario was just the next page in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Stuffed Fables. Have you ever played that?
I wanted to play. I own that because people told me it was a lot of fun. I've never gotten to the table, so maybe faculty retreat.
Yeah, it's fun. Playing stuffed animals, protecting your child from nightmares, basically.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
And you have different stories, so it's fun. But
so the last thing I wanted to mention that I wanted to come out is just sort of a tip for, I think it's a way to maybe help engage different players and sort of gauge the different level of investment that different players will have. And so, for example, there was a situation where my character had a connection to an organization, I think it was called like the Robin or something, like the Robin the Bird was like our mascot or something. And as we were going about our adventure, my character noticed that there was a robin nearby that was like sitting on a branch kind of whistling. And my first instinct is like, well, I'm going to hold out my hand and see if the robin will come to me. But the DM didn't actually give me that option. Like, as soon as my character noticed it, the DM said, okay, and the robin flies over to you and you realize that there's a note on it and you can pull the note and here's what the note says. And it wasn't like that was bad or anything, but I realized that's one of the things that I do as a DM is I will build in pauses to see if the player wants to take control and do that sort of thing. Like, oh, well, can I, like, and whistle and see if the bird will come to me. And just giving me like a 2 second pause to see if my character wants to engage with that versus just going straight to, and then the bird flies over to you and you get the note. It stuck out to me as like, that is something I do in my games a lot, where I will pause to see if somebody wants to step into that spotlight. And if so, then they get to sort of direct how that interaction is. And if no one does, then I will continue on and, you know, read the box text or whatever it is. But as a GM, I would advise as a technique to build in those pauses, see if someone wants to take control and initiative. And if not, then great, no problem. At the end of the day, we're still going to have the bird show up and we're going to get the note. But it feels different when the player gets to go, oh, I recognize that. That's part of my backstory. Let me interact with this NPC type of a thing. I felt like it was just too directed, where it was this box text. And I would advise building in pauses just to let players have the opportunity to step forward. And if no one does, no harm, no foul. But if they do, I think it feels different. It feels better as a player if it's like, I made that happen, rather than it was going to happen no matter what you did.
I agree. I do that early in games too.
I have played with you. It is absolutely something you do.
I do it early, especially early in games, so I can judge.
Right, yes. You can judge each player who wants to step in, who doesn't.
Yeah, you judge who at the table is, I want to say, the dominant player, because there's usually one person at the table that kind of leads things and kind of keeps the party going. Maybe more the leader is a better term, not the dominant player, but that tells me who it's going to be, and it also tells me who's the really shy player that may not want to be in the spotlight. But yeah, I do that a lot too.
I thought of you in that moment, because it's something, I don't know if I will say I stole it from you, but I've noticed in the games that I've played with you, or sometimes like when I'm listening to the games that you've ran, I can hear those pauses where you're waiting for someone to step into the spotlight. And I just think it's a good technique. Like you said, you got four or five players at the table, you give everybody one opportunity or two, and if someone takes it, great. Now I know that you and I, we are going to have this level of interaction. And if someone doesn't take it, that's a different level of interaction. Not to say it's not as important, but some people just don't want that. Some people don't want to be in the spotlight, but they still want to play the game. So I'm not going to look down on them or anything. But I know I need to give this person more opportunities, and I don't need to give as many here, or I need to it's like a gauging mechanic of how much interaction that person wants or will self-direct. And it helps me run the rest of the game based on that early opportunity to do so.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad you're excited to go back.
Absolutely. We'll be there next year if I can.
Maybe not book yourself game after game after game.
Maybe I might lunch
break in there.
Yeah, I might build in. But I guess one sort of negative is there's so many games there that are like Pathfinder organized play and D&D organized play, and I don't care about those games at all. So I didn't have as many options for other games. So when I found a game I wanted, I took it. And that's part of the reason why my schedule was packed the way it was. I couldn't get into Dread at other times. I was only able to get in that Gloomhaven in certain times. So that might be the one negative. I actually was hoping there would be a more wide variety of games, but that's not what this is for. So that would, it's a Michael thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just, I was like, oh, okay, there's only certain opportunities to play in these certain games, and I'm going to take them when I can. But maybe next year I might just be like, okay, I'm going to take the evening off and go out and have a nice dinner or hang out with people, because I did almost none of that.
That is one of my favorite things about conventions. Finding that time just to hang out with either new people you meet or people you've met and played games with for a long time. Do a off-book game.
Mm-hmm.
Play just something random, even if it's just a board game. Just to, I don't know, refresh yourself in a way. And not have to worry about rushing from game to game. Or like you said, just go out to a nice dinner and relax. Then talk about the games you're at. And then go back to find a table and stay up till 2 in the morning playing board games and be super tired the next day.
Yeah, for me, especially Gen Con, that is a big part of my Gen Con experience. It is the games at the hotel in the evenings. And I still don't always do that well, but I try to build in my evenings free, unless there's like a very specific game that I'm really wanting to play. I now leave my evenings free in Gen Con so that because it's just sort of a thing we do. We all be back at the hotel. We talk about our games, the good, the bad. Like if we bought a game, we will often play it in the lobby as a group. again, I wasn't at Origins alone necessarily. I roomed with Chris, but Chris has his own, not you, Chris, different Chris. Mm-hmm. But he has his own sort of agenda and the things that he's wanting to do. But like if I start to have more Origin friends that I have, I probably will do more of that in the future.
I'm glad you had a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. And anyone listening, if Origins is a convention that you go to a lot, please let me know. I will try to get into a game with you. Or again, maybe you will become that social partner. We can hang out if that's something you're interested in doing. But a big thank you to all my GMs, even the games I didn't particularly enjoy. Thank you for running the games for the people who did enjoy those and wanted to play them. And again, it very much could have been me is the reason why, not necessarily you. So. But we're going to wrap things up there. If you are interested in hearing more about my games, I did post every day on Facebook, and I have been going through on TikTok. Each game, I'm doing a short video talking about some of the things that you would have heard here. So please consider following me on TikTok. That's at the RPG Academy or MKR_2222. Either one of those will get you to me. So Chris, any final words before we sign off here? Just convention advice, GM, player, just anything you want to share?
Go find the things you want to do. Try to give players the games they came to play and just try to have fun. Don't stress out either. And if you can, don't do what I do and get nervous before each game that you're running. People already signed up for it. They're excited to play. Try not to be nervous and just sit down and play. And I say that to myself every time I run a game, and every time I run a game, the first thought I have is, nobody's going to like this. And then I have to tell myself, yes, they will. And then halfway through the game, I have to tell myself, they're enjoying it. Stop doubting yourself.
I'm the same way, though. Before every game I run, I get nervous. No matter how many times I do it, I get anxious to the point I'm almost like, I hope people cancel because like I'm so nervous about it. But once you start doing it, it's fine. People are there to have fun. Just don't get in their way, and they probably will. So,
absolutely.
All right. Well, then we will just sign off as we always do here at the RPG Academy. If you're having fun,
you're doing it right.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.